Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. In this hour, we're talking about where your money goes when you invest. Is it supporting companies that are consistent with your values? Well, about 2 weeks ago, legislators, business leaders, and nonprofits gathered right here in San Francisco for the Global Climate Action Summit to discuss plans to mitigate climate risk. A key factor central to achieving this sustainable future, it's your investment portfolio. And there's more than a moral argument for moving your money out of fossil fuels and into clean energy. As climate and energy legislation changes the investor playbook, divestment is more a fiduciary responsibility than an ethical dilemma. California's largest pension funds, Bay Area cities, and local residents are increasingly turning their sights to sustainable investments and influencing corporate strategy along the way. Tonight, in the final installment of our three-part series on course-correcting climate change, we're talking about the moral and economic incentives for green investing. Joining me by phone is California State Controller Betty Yee, the state of California's chief financial officer. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you, Ethan.
And also joining me here in the studio is Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, senior director of the Investor Network at Ceres, which is a nonprofit organization working with hundreds of institutional investors and public companies to help align their environmental interests. Welcome, Kirsten.
Glad to be with you.
And we're also joined by Sandy Emerson, member of the board of Fossil Free California and head of the Move Your Money campaign. Welcome, Sandy.
Nice to be here.
And finally, we're joined by David Elliston, clean finance expert and creator of Clean Portfolios. Welcome, David.
Thanks a lot.
And in about 20 minutes, we'll invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation. And you can dial our toll-free line at 1-866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us in the meantime at cityvisions@kalw.org. You can post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. Well, State Controller Yee, let me begin with you. So you are, as I mentioned, the state's chief financial officer, serving on the boards of CalPERS and CalSTRS, the two largest pension funds in the country with over $590 billion in assets. Can you describe for our listeners just what these pension funds are, how they operate, and what your role specifically is in working with them?
Sure. So as a member of the boards of both pension funds, our fiduciary duty is really our first priority, and that is to make sure that the funds are sustained and that we have reliable financial returns so that workers who contribute to these funds will have some financial security in their later years of life. And CalPERS and CalSTRS are the two largest public pension funds in the nation. And our stakeholders are the 2.8 million California state government employees, teachers, and retirees who depend on us to ensure their retirement income security. And as you'd opened up, Ethan, about really the moral argument for more responsible investing, sustainable investing, I think at this time it's becoming front and center that fiduciary duty also includes factoring in the sustainability of our natural resources and the health of our planet that our retirees will be living in.
Well, I definitely want to get to that. And just real quickly, what is the difference between CalPERS and CalSTRS?
CalPERS represents both government employees at the state and local level. We have local public employers who are part of the system as well. CalSTRS is the state teacher's retirement system, and we are the we provide retirement benefits for our state's educators.
And you did just mention about increasingly factoring in environment and climate priorities and climate risk in the pension fund portfolio. So can you talk a little bit about how that's playing out with these pension funds?
Sure. Both pension funds, because of our size, we've been actively looking at how we consider advancing our investments in the clean energy space, certainly in climate-related investments. And we look across all of our asset classes in our portfolio to look at where those opportunities are. Both funds have been making direct investments into clean energy facilities, as well as doing our part in creating our portfolio of low-carbon index strategies as well.
And what's driving these investments? Is it just sort of the inclinations of the people on the board, or are there actual legal requirements that you have to take these steps?
Well, no legal requirements, but I do think, as I mentioned, part of the fiduciary responsibility is to pay attention to what kind of a planet we're leaving for our retirees. And so as we look at globally where investors, our sister funds are, relative to these issues, where I believe we're moving in lockstep and advancing our leadership in terms of more investments in the climate-related space.
And even if someone didn't actually believe in climate change or feel that it was that much of a concern, are there also economic reasons why you'd want to invest in climate-friendly investments or perhaps divest from fossil fuel-based companies?
Absolutely. So when we look at, for example, where we invest our assets relative to real estate investments, we're going to want to be sure that we have energy optimization provisions for where we put our money. Be sure that those assets can be sustained, those investments can be sustained over time. And so it's really looking across the portfolio to see where we can make those investments. So it is really an economic decision at the end of the day, but also understanding that what we want to do is, particularly with policy changes globally and certainly here in California, that we're responding to the demand that will be before us to move to a more clean, renewable energy world.
And when you talk about the policy environment, are there particular environmental laws that have had a significant impact on the fund's investment strategies?
I think there's one that will have a lot more impact, and that is Governor Brown's recent signature on Senate Bill 100, which is poised to move California to 100% clean renewable energy by 2045. And when you think about something like that, the first question is, how are we going to get there? And I believe that that policy alone will spur a lot more discussion globally about opportunities for these types of low-energy investments, low-carbon investments.
So what are some of the practical impacts then of SB 100? We actually covered this bill. I had author State Senator Kevin De Leon on the program a couple weeks ago, right after the governor signed it. Are there specific industries then that you think maybe might be less appealing to invest in as a result of SB 100? I mean, is it a situation where maybe less on the investor-owned utility and more on a renewable energy company or something along those lines?
Well, I think I look at it certainly as a trustee, both specific to the fund, but also more globally. Both funds, both CalSTRS and CalPERS are also working to meet the goals of the Paris Agreement. And if you look at the role of Senate Bill 100, that's just going to get us part of the way there. So we're going to need to be much more global in terms of looking at how we're going to make this transition. And so at this point, I would say that we're going to see a lot of change. We're going to see new industries and certainly new opportunities for investment come up, and then certainly looking at transitioning beyond fossil fuels.
And right now, what percentage of the portfolios are allowed to be in fossil fuels, and what is required or otherwise in clean energy or renewable-type investments, like wind, solar, or hydro?
Sure. Currently, our pension funds don't have quotas or targets for renewables. We add investments based on market conditions, the opportunities that are available, and certainly the risk-return objectives. However, our opportunities have increased for investment in renewable energy as prices fall and as demand grows and as technology advances, and I think that's what we're going to see when we have policies like Senate Bill 100. Still, I think there are challenges in this emerging market for public pension funds. Many of the green energy technologies are still in the early stages of development and still rather untested, so it presents a high degree of investment risk. And I think as a trustee, our job is to really, kind of balance that risk, but also know that there's tremendous opportunity going forward as well.
And there has been some legislation, if I'm not mistaken, so SB 185, for example, requiring divestment from thermal coal. So there has been some legislation that does require you to take certain steps?
Yes, and we generally don't get many legislative mandates. SB 185 was a mandate to have both funds essentially get out of our thermal coal investments, and both funds have done that.
Mm-hmm. So how much right now is still invested in fossil fuels?
Let's see. I would say that I don't have that number off the top of my head. I apologize. But it is obviously there's still money in fossil fuels. But the way that we are also looking to move beyond that is to get companies that we do invest in that are in the fossil fuel space to also look at their own business operation, how they can help be part of the transition towards more clean, renewable energy.
Mm-hmm. And can you speak to the fund's performance record since this shift in investments began towards greener companies and away from fossil fuel-based companies?
Well, I think it's still too early to tell, but I would say that, over the past few years, we've had some positive returns, but I wouldn't say it's specifically because of the low-carbon green investments. It's really the entire portfolio and have been more strategic about the total fund and where we need to place our assets. But it's a combination of both looking at strategic allocations and where we invest, as well as continuing our engagement strategies as part of a global network of institutional investors that are really doing the work with companies that are the highest emitters to see if we can have them help be part of the solution in terms of changing their operation, getting out of the fossil fuel space, and moving towards a more clean, renewable future.
And have you gotten pushback in terms of this effort to try to have more green investments and move away from dirtier investments?
Well, I think the pushback we have heard publicly is for many of the beneficiaries of our system, the retirees or the soon-to-be retirees, some take issue with this because they believe it creates more risk in terms of the fund that such that their benefits may be jeopardized. But it is a balance. We are a long-term institutional investor, so we take a long-term view. And I believe the balance of looking at both where we can place our assets relative to low-carbon investments, clean energy investments, as well as engaging many of our top emitters, we have to do all of the above to really get there, and certainly with the goals of the Paris Agreement to keep our global warming well below 2 degrees.
And how's the fund doing? What are the kind of typical returns that you
get? Well, both funds are doing well. We have had good returns above our 7% assumed rate of return these last past years.
And I also wanted to bring up the Carbon Asset Risk Initiative. Can you talk a little bit about that and why it's important to CalPERS specifically?
Sure. This was an initiative, a joint effort of both CalPERS and CalSTRS, very active. It was launched in September of 2013. And the Carbon Asset Risk Initiative brought together 70 global investors with more than about $3 trillion in assets. And these collaborators called on about 45 major oil, gas, coal, electric power companies to essentially stress test financial risks that climate change poses to their corporate business plans. So each company was asked to review its exposure to risk and its plan for managing those risks under two main scenarios. First, business as usual, and a low-carbon scenario consistent with reducing greenhouse gas emissions to achieve the Paris goal. And this early initiative, at the very least, has raised awareness at a very high level, informing much of the success that we've had since launching our Climate Action 100 Plus initiative. And this is where we do have almost 300 institutional investors around the world, representing about $31 trillion in assets under management, to look at engaging with the top greenhouse gas emitters. And this is exactly the kind of engagement we're going to be doing with them, look at their business, to have them come up with scenario plans that will help us get to the goals of the Paris Agreement.
And you just mentioned engagement, and I know that you're also a member of Ceres Board of Directors, and of course we have Reverend Kirsten Spalding here in studio. We're going to be talking with her in just a moment. But you share the opinion that engagement is an important strategy. And can you explain a little bit about what that means and how it differs from divestment as a sort of alternative to engagement?
Sure. So both funds have really placed a lot of premium on engagement because we believe that we divest, not only does it create exposure to the fund in the near term, but we also essentially lose our leverage in terms of getting these companies to move in their own right, and certainly consistent with what we believe their future business plans need to look like. So we get involved in the global engagement strategies like Climate Action 100 Plus. Each of the funds is also very active in taking leadership of some of the top, many of the 100 companies that are part of that initiative. But, divestment, there may be room to talk about that when we don't see any kind of improvement by our largest emitters. But right now, the belief is we need these companies to help us with the transition, and they have the potential to help us get there. In our own engagement with each of the funds, we've been able to move many of the large oil companies, BP, Shell, to put many of their assets into more of the clean energy space.
Mm-hmm. And in the next few years, or kind of short-term future, what do you see as the pension fund's goals when it comes specifically to this issue of climate change? What can people expect to see happen here?
Absolutely. Well, you'll see both funds building on our success in terms of our global collaboration. Both funds understand we can't do this alone either, and so it is. This really is a global community of investors that are working together to move us ahead relative to getting close to meeting the goals of the Paris Agreement, and hopefully we get there. An important part of my duty as a board member is encouraging not only our board, but our managers, our portfolio firms, and policymakers to consider the opportunities of climate change, but also being very cognizant of the risks. And we'll continue to lead on the engagement efforts through Climate Action 100 Plus. And then we just launched the Investor Agenda at the Principles for Responsible Investment Conference 2 weeks ago in San Francisco, in addition to the Governor's Climate Action Summit. And this is really about supporting investors around the world in addressing climate risk as both an environmental and an economic issue. And this way, we're able to really scale up our leadership with respect to where we invest, how we engage with companies, what we do relative to investor disclosure, and then also being very active on the policy front as well. So this is really the multi-prong process that we're going to need to continue to be engaged in, and I can tell you both funds are well poised to do that.
Well, and you mentioned policy. Are there any particular laws or regulations that you would really like to see put in place to help further what you're doing in terms of green investing with the state pension funds?
Well, I think what we'll need to do is just to be sure that we have just very, very robust engagement with companies. Investments, obviously, but also knowing what we're dealing with, that when we invest in a company, that we know what their operation is. We know that they, in turn, are taking care of their own climate risk, which is a business risk and certainly an economic risk for them, and that we have that engagement at the highest levels to where they know that we mean business as an investor community. And that's what the purpose of the investor agenda is. It's the purpose of Climate Action 100. This is not just about CalPERS and CalSTRS. It's about the entire global investor community.
And I guess I have to ask the sort of flip side of that. What type of legislation do you see bandied about that gives you heart palpitations and might stand in the way of what you're trying to do?
Well, as much as I like to think that California is a leader, we're continuing to battle, unfortunately, policies coming out of Washington that looks to still try to exploit our coast and waters for additional drilling. And so, there's still a lot of interest in looking at extracting oil, and we're just going to continue to be at the forefront of being sure that that's not the future that we're headed towards.
All right. Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the phone tonight, Betty. And for our listeners, that's California State Controller Betty Yee. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ethan.
All right. Well, let's turn now to our guests here in the studio. We've got an excellent panel, Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, Senior Director of the Investor Network at Ceres, Sandy Emerson, from head of the Move Your Money campaign and a fossil-free California board member, and clean finance expert David Elliston, creator of Clean Portfolios. I want to move to them in just a second, but also let our listeners know that you are listening to City Visions here on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking about clean energy investments, and we also want to hear from you as well. So you, of course, can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. But we're also opening up the phone lines with any of your questions or comments. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. We want to hear your questions. Do you know where your investments are going? Is it to oil and gas or solar and wind? We want to hear from you. So, Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, of course, we had one of your board members, Betty Yee, just on the line right now. And I wanted to turn to you. So Ceres, as I mentioned in the intro, is a nonprofit and one of the also primary coordinators of the Global Climate Action Summit a couple weeks ago here in San Francisco. And one of the focal points of the summit was the investment risks and opportunities of climate change. So what role does Ceres play with institutional investors and the business community?
So we mobilize some of the most influential companies and businesses to work on sustainability, and that includes climate change, freshwater scarcity, human rights abuses. And we do that both by encouraging them, the investors and the companies, to take leadership action, and then also having them advocate for policy that will really advance those efforts.
And Betty Yee just talked about how CalPERS and CalSTRS are addressing climate risk. What do you see other pension funds doing to reflect the goals of the 2015 Paris Agreement that she referenced and reduce carbon emissions accordingly?
So our members run a full spectrum. We've got big pension funds like CalPERS and CalSTRS, New York Common, New York City pension funds. And then we've got big asset managers, State Street and BlackRock. And then we have smaller funds, some religious pensions, some socially responsible investors, some impact investors. So we see them doing a range of activities. The big pension funds, I think many follow CalPERS and CalSTRS, really thinking about the risks and opportunities, using their voice with the companies that they own or with whom they have debt To try and move them in the right direction, because we know the low carbon economy is coming. So they want to have high value companies in that future. But some of our other more impact oriented and mission oriented investors are really thinking about what they can do with their money that's going to make a difference in a very direct way. They're less constrained by their duty to their beneficiaries and more focused on how they can advance the sustainable development goals and the objectives of the Paris Climate Accord.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is what the motivation is. I mean, does it seem to be purely economic? Is it kind of the do-gooder impulse? What are you seeing?
Both in the network, and we have leaders really across that spectrum. I would say almost all are prepared to talk about the risks and the opportunities. And in the opportunity set, just as Betty said, there's lots of opportunities to invest in the new clean energy economy, but they're also looking for high-quality companies. So it might be a company that is a food producer, but they're really efficient in their water use. They're really thinking about their energy productivity. And those kinds of companies are the ones that are going to be, you know, high value in the long run.
And can you give us a sense as to what kinds of investments they make? I mean, does it tend to be more on the, we see opportunities on the, you know, renewable clean energy side that we were talking about, or is it more we want to move away from companies that might be at risk either of climate impacts, like, you know, Betty mentioned real estate that might get flooded by sea level rise, or coal companies that might get shut down with more regulations?
It depends on the investor, but I would say in general it's both, that they are looking to reduce their risks and and maximize their returns. I think besides the renewable space, we're also seeing some funds move into low carbon, so screening out high carbon or heavy emitting companies in some cases, or really looking for ways to find wind, solar, hydro, opportunities, technologies that they think are going to be the winners in the next generation.
You mentioned screening out. So how do we rate these companies? I mean, as you said, there are some companies, food producers, that may not seem environmental, but maybe they're doing something that is a business practice that actually has a positive environmental output. I mean, how do you measure these companies to be able to know this is actually a green investment?
Yeah, it's a very sophisticated process with investment analysts who really study the sector. And they can really sort by looking at the governance of the companies, looking at whether or not they've done scenarios, whether they're disclosing their carbon footprints. Sector by sector, the experts sort of look at what's material to that company and how to reduce the risks and how to really prepare for the future.
And you also helped create and launch the Green Bond Pledge. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what the reaction has been?
We're really excited about the Green Bond Pledge. This is a pledge, there were two sides of it, but the pledge itself was by bond issuers. So cities, companies that issue bonds, which are essentially debt, and promise that they're going to look at the sustainability of the projects as a way to evaluate what they're building in the future. So, for example, if a city is looking at transportation options, by this pledge, they're agreeing to really look at the sustainability of those transportation or infrastructure options and issue a green bond if it's appropriate.
And you've seen some success now in terms of uptake?
We're really excited. There are 12 cities and companies that signed on as founding members of the pledge, and we expect that we're going to see a lot more. Some big ones like Mexico City really making that move. And here in San Francisco, the San Francisco PUC has already issued a green bond, and now the city has committed to do all of their bond issuance with an eye towards whether or not the infrastructure could be done with a green bond.
And you also launched the Investor Agenda during the Global Climate Action Summit that we just had here. Can you describe what that is about?
Yeah, Betty mentioned it. We're really thrilled. 400 institutional investors with about $32 trillion in assets under management, which is about a third larger than the U.S. economy as measured by GDP in 2017, all took action together in a concerted framework. And the framework includes both investment, so that looking for opportunities, engagement, as Betty described, using the Climate Action 100 Plus Forum, disclosure so that there's more transparency about what investors are doing in this realm, and then policy advocacy, really getting engaged with the policymakers.
Mm-hmm. And were there any other major announcements in the areas of divestment or clean energy investment that's come up?
There were some very significant ones. I would say that the New York City announcements were really terrific. They promised to double their investments in clean energy and carbon solutions to $4 billion. In Europe, we saw Candrium Investors Group divesting from any company that gets more than 10% of its revenues from coal. As Betty said, both CalPERS and CalSTRS are increasing their assets in low-carbon funds, and CalSTRS has stopped making any new investments in thermal coal. So those kinds of investments really send the right signal to the capital markets, and we expect that other investors will follow them.
And it seemed like the summit was a good opportunity to help catalyze some of these announcements.
It was great to have so many together in one place.
I bet. And also this topic of engagement versus divestment that we talked a little bit about with Controller Yi, I know Ceres favors engagement, as does Controller Yi. Can you explain a little bit about why that is?
Yeah, the investor agenda says that we don't believe thermal coal is a good investment, and so many of our members are taking action and just getting out of thermal coal altogether. But they do it from a risk perspective. That's why they want to get out. And then on the engagement side, the Climate Action 100 Plus, I think, recognizes that the energy sector is dominated at this point by companies that are primarily in fossil fuels. We're going to stay in the energy sector, but we want to transform that energy sector. So we're working with these heavy emitting companies and trying to get them to move their assets, to change their capital expenditures, to really begin to prepare for a different kind of future. And we expect that some of them will. And they'll be the good companies of the future, and some of them won't. And we recognize that they aren't going to hold value for the investors in the long run.
So let me bring in Sandy Emerson here from Fossil Free California. So, Sandy, what's your perspective on engagement versus divestment? And is this a real kind of fault line in the debate around climate-friendly investments?
Well, I'd say that there are two positions on the spectrum. There are a range of actions that people take to align their money with their values. Pension funds are constrained to provide good performance for their beneficiaries, and they have changed their definition of fiduciary. It has evolved over the time that we've come to realize how serious an issue we have with climate change. Divestment is a tool in the arsenal that sends a clear message. I don't want to invest in that particular sector. With the evolution of the definition of fiduciary responsibility, funds are becoming more able and more empowered to send that same message by reallocating their assets. So I think of it as positions that are both necessary to spur the debate. Activism started the fossil fuel divestment movement back in 2012 when Bill McKibben did his Do the Math tour. And activism is continuing the growth of the divestment movement, which is the fastest growing social movement in this century. There have been major, major commitments by institutions and individuals, so that the total sum of assets under management now that have been pledged to divest from fossil fuels is $6.24 trillion.
So would you like to see, would your organization also, and just speaking for yourself, like to see more divestment? I mean, do you think that's sort of a tool that's being underused right now?
Well, I think that reliance on engagement begs the question of whether the fossil fuel companies can change their core business. And shareholder resolutions cannot be brought against a company's core business. They can be directed at issues of governance and other activities. But the fossil fuel companies, as we all know, have known for several decades that the harm that their products are causing to the environment, with attribution science, they're being held accountable for the harm that their products have caused.
And attribution is where they can actually link specific amounts of climate change to their emissions of a particular industry or company.
Yes, that's right. But divestment is a sharp tool, and it is used judiciously. And reliance on engagement, I think, has a low probability of success, and I think we're running out of time. As you may have heard, the year 2020 is highly significant. Christiana Figueroa says that is the point at which we must bend down the curve of greenhouse gas emissions. And if we delay by continuing to engage, or if we have too long a time horizon, the consequences could be severe.
All right. Well, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're talking about clean energy investments and divestment. We're joined by guests. We were joined just by California State Controller Betty Yee. And in studio, we have Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, Senior Director of the Investor Network at Ceres, Sandy Emerson, head of the Move Your Money campaign and a fossil-free California board member, and clean finance expert David Elliston, creator of Clean Portfolio. We want to hear from you, and the phone lines are open. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Do you think legislation is going far enough in its environmental requirements of the state's pension funds, CalPERS and CalSTRS? How green is your portfolio? Have you made the move from fossil fuel investments to clean energy? Do you want to tell us about your experience? We'd love to hear it. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. Well, back to this subject of divestment. Sandy Emerson, wanted to stick with you. Can you give some examples where divestment has been successful?
The divestment movement with fossil fuels was based on the model of the divestment from South Africa during the apartheid movement. And so the divestment issue is not one of causing companies to go out of business, but rather removing the social license for bad actors to continue their bad practices. In that way, divestment is as much a consciousness-raising movement as it is a financial strategy. What has become clear, though, given the fact that 80% of the identified fossil fuel reserves cannot be burned if we are to keep our planet from warming beyond 2 degrees Celsius, is that investments as such in fossil fuels carry significant risk. Their value can drop precipitously through government actions, through investor retreat, and through the rise of renewables in their place.
And we've also talked about your Move Your Money campaign. And can you tell listeners what that's about and how it works?
Move Your Money is aimed at individuals, and it advises individuals how to move their money out of Wall Street banks into local banks or credit unions, and it advises individuals how to align their investments with their values by moving their money out of fossil fuels and into clean energy funds. We use a number of tools that work for individual investors so that they can research for themselves and find out what their money is up to. The Dakota Access Pipeline activism, which was indigenous-led, is the historical event that brought bank exits to the forefront for many individuals. The list of banks, the Rainforest Action Network and Food and Water Watch and other researchers pulled together the list of banks that were funding the Dakota Access Pipeline, and people left those banks in droves. Millions and millions of dollars were pulled from these banks. Bank exits going forward are still a good way to speak to your beliefs about pipelines, because the flow of money from banks to pipeline projects is well known. And the same researchers continue to publish this great data so that you can see what's up.
And has the campaign, you mentioned the millions of dollars coming out of banks, has it had other measurable impacts in terms of changing behavior or changing corporate behavior in terms of climate risks and climate investments?
Well, I think the banks themselves have taken cognizance of this customer activism. And some banks, for example, BNP Paribas, which is the parent company of Bank of the West, they have started using their choice of investment projects as a selling point. It hasn't always gone over well. There are some communities in mining country in Colorado that are pulling their money out of that bank because they're green. But it gives customers more choices, and it gives cities more choices, which is really important. Cities need bigger banks. Mm-hmm. Cities cannot necessarily move their money if they resolve to divest from a particular bank or a particular sector. They can't transfer to a bank that is not equipped to handle their business.
Well, on the subject of what individuals can do, and obviously they can put pressure, political pressure on their financial institutions, but I want to bring in clean finance expert David Elliston, creator of Clean Portfolios. So, David, can you tell listeners a little bit about what it is you do and what your sort of advice is for people who want to invest in more climate-friendly or green-type businesses?
Sure. You'll excuse if my story is more personal than the institutional stories here, but as Sandy said, I got very engaged after the Dakota Access Pipeline and watching over Thanksgiving the kind of things we saw in pictures. And, you know, this kind of complicity engaged me. And so getting away from a bank was fairly easy. But when I looked at my IRA or 401k, that was a much more challenging thing. And, you know, there has been a great development of socially responsible and sustainable funds in the last few years. And those products have come out, and now they are available to us. And so I'm trying to help people figure out how to convert from what they have, which might be Vanguard index funds or the equivalent, and go to a low-carbon or fossil-free version of that. And that's a big universe.
So what do you tell people? I mean, I think a lot of people maybe don't even know where to begin, and they maybe don't even know what their funds are investing in. So how do they begin, and what do you tell them as a sort of starting point to get started?
Well, I mean, I think there are some good tools out there. The tool that I was using last year was Fossil Free Funds, and you can go to Fossil Free Funds, and you can put in your fund and find out what kind of profile it has, what it has in it, carbon, weapons, and so on. There are variations. But what do you do with that information?
Yeah, exactly. Once you have it, I mean, it is important. That's the first step, right, to know, am I investing in a company that is not consistent with my values? Then what's the next step if you wanted to take a move towards climate-friendly investing?
But just to paint how simple this can be, you know, if you own the S&P 500, which is very common, and your index fund looks a lot like the S&P 500, you could replace it with a fossil-free version of the S&P 500. And this is, in my opinion, a very low-risk thing to do to your portfolio. You're not shifting massive amounts of your change. You're really just eliminating a sector. And, you know, studies show that you could eliminate any sector without any long-term consequences on your portfolio.
And are the companies making it easy to do it? I mean, some of these index funds, can you call them up and say, look, I don't like what you're doing on energy investments, and can I take my dollars out of that particular aspect of your portfolio?
Oh, I encourage everyone to call up their company and do that. I called up Vanguard, I called up Fidelity, and here we are 2 years later, and now Fidelity and Vanguard have sustainable options. And they are not great. They are, you know, mainstream. But it's so encouraging to see these new products come out from mainstream companies that are listening.
And when you say they're not great, what do you mean?
I mean, when you punch them into a tool, when you come to Clean Portfolios and start to look at comparing, and that's what we want to do, is help you look inside your 10,000 options or a few hundred options, you'll start to realize, oh, they still hold fossil fuels. What was their criteria? And it turns out that sustainability or social responsibility is very complex criteria, and you can come at it from different ways.
So what do you think needs to change to make sure that we have a little more assurance that we're actually getting the performance, the environmental performance out of our investments that we think we're getting when we're going with some of these larger funds?
Well, I mean, I think that we need to be able to more easily understand the impact that we're having with our money. Most of us are not taking any control over that impact, and that kind of vote is just sitting there on the table. So by surfacing this information, you look inside your portfolio, you analyze, oh, this is how much carbon is in it. This is how much fossil fuel companies, or this is how much weapons I own.
Mm-hmm. And Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, you probably hear this from individuals. I know you work at the institutional level, but institutions are, of course, offering these products then to, you know, the average person who wants to change where they invest. What do you say when you hear these kinds of complaints that, you know, hey, that's Vanguard green fund isn't as green as I want it to be. What's your response?
You know, I'm excited about the fact that, it, just as David said, the customers are demanding these kinds of products. And so I think they're going to get better over time. But I think the way Ceres works with our members on this is to really focus on transparency. Just as David said, we need to know what's in those portfolios. And we're following the recommendations of the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosure, the TCFD, and really trying to get investors to do a full-fledged scenario analysis. How's your portfolio going to perform if we can manage to turn the tide, as Sandy said, and begin to see reductions in global warming, or alternatively, what's your portfolio going to look like if it's business as usual? And so I think customers need a lot more information, and our members are beginning to really try and figure out how to get that and how to present it in ways that investors and their customers can read it and act on it.
So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're talking about clean energy investments and how we can invest in the green companies that are consistent with our values. We're joined by guests, Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, Senior Director of the Investor Network at Ceres, Sandy Emerson, Head of Move Your Money Campaign and a fossil-free California board member, and clean finance expert David Elliston, creator of Clean Portfolios. We want to hear from you with your questions about how green your portfolio might be, or how we could better move away from fossil fuels with our investment strategies towards clean energy. The number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on kalw.org, or follow us on Twitter at cityvisionskalw. So, David Elliston, I wanted to go back to you. Do you monitor the industry in terms of the low-carbon economy? Are there particular sectors that you think are emerging that really merit more investment dollars?
I think investing in energy is very dangerous, very risky. I've certainly experienced in my own time entering, leaving these markets, and they're extremely volatile. So when I talk about helping people get out of fossil fuels, that's one thing. I'm not saying move all your money to renewables. You know, we have to. But on the other hand, there is almost a moral imperative at this point to start putting money into climate solutions. You know, we're supposed to be putting $1 trillion a year in right now for the next until 2050, and we're not there. So I would love to help people find the way to take that allocation that they have for fossil fuels and assign it to things that are really moving the needle in climate solutions.
And are you seeing some of these fossil fuel companies change their behaviors? I mean, as you monitor these different companies, are they sort of trying to adapt to this new investor appetite for cleaner products?
I'm an activist. I consider the fossil fuel companies to be rogue actors on the world stage who are not interested really in engaging at all. So I'm not really sure which is the least bad of these actors. But as an individual, you don't really have to support and profit from any of them.
And you mentioned, just so I can give listeners some tools, you mentioned fossil-free funds. Are there other clean portfolio tools out there that listeners should be aware of?
Well, so fossil-free funds gives you access to direct a look inside a specific fund, and you'll get a lot of details. What I've built on top of that, cleanportfolios.com, tries to help you bring together multiple funds into what we normally have to have as a portfolio. There are also traditional tools from places like Morningstar, where you can look at sustainability ratings and such. But a lot of this data is not available to us. And one thing I'd like to do is bring together the nonprofit data that's out there and you know, maybe access to the more paid data, but give individuals access to that.
And from a policy perspective, are there certain tools you'd like to see put in place along the lines of trying to improve access to data and transparency? I'll turn it to you. Kirsten Spaulding.
Ceres has been really delighted with Senator Warren's efforts to advance legislation that directs the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to issue rules that would require companies to disclose critical information about their exposure risks posed by climate change. The disclosure, she calls it the Climate Risk Disclosure Act, it's going to allow the market via institutional investors and others to better assess the risks, really spurring both public and private sector actors to address climate change while promoting a more stable U.S. economy. So we think that that's one particularly important new bill that's on the horizon in terms of disclosure.
So, and on the subject of legislation, then, are there types of policies or legislation you'd like to see put in place?
You know, our members are really clear that they want a price on carbon. They can't make the investment decisions without knowing what the real price is. So they've been advocating both with the G7 and the G20, so at the international stage, but also at the federal and local level, saying, you know, carbon pricing is really necessary to stabilize markets.
And Sandy Emerson, same question for you in terms of your sort of policy wish list.
Well, one of our wishes was just granted. Yesterday morning, Governor Brown signed SB 964, which is a bill that requires CalPERS and CalSTRS to disclose the climate-related financial risk of their holdings. So this kind of transparency policy is an essential part of alerting investors to the real risks that the fossil fuel companies represent, that the fund's investments in these companies represent. One would like to believe that if you know what the risks are, then you can better determine the right actions.
And do you think this SB 964 is going to be strong enough to deliver us the transparency that we need as it relates to fossil fuel investments and climate risks?
Well, it's certainly a good step. The time frame of the bill is a bit concerning. The first report is not due until 2020, and then the reports have to be updated every 3 years after that. So it might seem a bit stronger if the first report was due next week or something. But these transparency measures are part of the peeling away of the mystique that has surrounded the fossil fuel companies for all of their active life, and the mystique that some of the fossil fuel companies, maybe the larger ones, are desperately trying to preserve. They are convinced that their reserves, their particular reserves, will all be used, and that other companies may suffer or have assets stranded, but you know they want to continue business as usual, seemingly for as long as possible. So I think some of these steps that fossil fuel companies are taking are kind of lightweight and insufficient given the gravity of the situation.
Well, we have a question, an email from Anne in Marin County, who asks, is becoming 100% fossil-free realistic? So, Sandy, let me turn that question to you.
There's a budget. There's a budget for the amount of carbon that we can burn and avoid overheating the planet. And with the tremendous growth of renewables, there's displacement of fossil fuels. But clearly, there will be a place for fossil fuels for many decades. That's inevitable. That's realistic. To the extent that we can discover technologies as well as renewables that perhaps can help draw down the carbon, that would be great. But in the meantime, it is important to be realistic about the budget. With the pledges for the Paris Accord, that gets us still above 2 degrees centigrade. There is ambition for 1.75 or 1.5, and that ambition will take tremendous investment in renewables, maybe five times as much as we invested last year, up from next year until 2040. That level of investment needs more mobilization.
And David Elston, same question for you. I mean, is it realistic that we could have 100% fossil free world? How would that work? And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can be going much more aggressively than we have. You know, if we look at 2045 in terms of being clean on the energy sector, I mean, we could within 5 or 10 years get most of the fossil out of our energy sector locally. So it is reasonably, yes, absolutely.
All right. And this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, also on the web at KALW.org. We're talking about clean energy investments, joined by Reverend Kirsten Spaulding from Ceres, Sandy Emerson from Fossil Free California, and clean finance expert David Elliston. Earlier, we were joined by California State Controller Betty Yee. Our phone lines are open. If you have questions or comments for the panel, the number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-TALK. 798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or follow us or tweet us at cityvisionskalw on Twitter. So Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, wanted to go to you and ask about something that Ceres is involved in and being an active partner in the Climate Action 100+. Can you describe that that effort a bit?
Yeah, Climate Action 100+ was really a data-driven initiative. CalPERS initially did a carbon footprint of their whole portfolio, and they discovered that in their public equities, they had about 80 companies that made up 50% of the carbon emissions across that portfolio. And they looked around and said, well, if it's such a small number of companies that represent such a huge percentage of our carbon footprint, we wanted to ask other global investors like us to join us in engaging those companies and trying to bring the emissions down. Because if these are the 80 heaviest emitters in our portfolio, they must be the same 80 in every big pension fund around the globe. So that was the birth of this initiative. We now have 290 investors committed. CalPERS and CalSTRS are working with others in Europe, in Australia, in Asia, and they've divided up the companies so that investors are coming together in teams to ask them to reduce their emissions, to govern their and to do that really in a performance way. We want to count. We want to know how much your emissions are coming down, how fast, and we expect to benchmark them and really show progress along those lines. Then there's a governance piece, really wanting to make sure that the boards of directors of those companies are actively managing the transition. And then third, transparency. If the companies are more transparent about what's in their business plan, how they're going to address their emissions, how they're moving forward to meet the Paris climate goals, then investors will be in a better position to measure and make investment decisions. So it's a three-part engagement strategy, but the really new news is that it's coordinated with investors around the world.
And I gather you work a lot with investor groups that want to take action on this. What about those that don't care about this at all? What does Ceres do or other groups like yours do to try to change behavior?
Well, with the investors, I think we've got enough assets under management committed to the initiative now so that they have a strong voice with these companies. And you don't need every investor to act together. You just need the biggest ones, the ones that really have voice. But I think there's just a growing trend. I think Sandy's right. This is an important movement. And we're seeing more and more institutional investors, even the most traditional ones, saying, we've got to do something about this. You know, Larry Fink with BlackRock's statement was really important.
So we have a caller, Carl, calling in. Carl, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to observe, it seems absurd when libertarians pretend there's no climate change. I feel it's just as absurd when liberals pretend there's no nuclear power, and we shouldn't even find out what a new redesigned nuclear power system would look like if we started from scratch in 2018. And I know that we can get to negative emissions quickly if we include, renewables and nuclear together. And I'm just kind of surprised that nobody wants to think about that.
Yeah, no, Carl,
do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, sure. No, that's an important question that you hear a lot on the environmental side to some extent. Sandy Emerson, what's your take on nuclear energy? It's certainly fossil fuel free. Is it part of the mix that your organization advocates for?
It is true that nuclear energy has low carbons, but it is too risky, and I think this view is represented by most people who are envisioning the clean energy scenario. They are not including nukes. I've heard it said that switching from fossil fuels to nuclear power is like switching from heroin to crack cocaine, and nuclear power has already demonstrated amply the risks associated with its use. I think David might have something to say on this, yeah?
Yeah, David, does your website, your service include nuclear energy as something either bad or good along these lines?
Well, I don't look at nuclear energy in particular, but if you go into a sustainable fund and divest from fossil fuels, you are still allowed to go and buy a nuclear power sector fund. It's just that nuclear power takes like 20 or 30 years. I mean, it takes so long to deploy this, and at such amazing cost. It's almost a red herring in the process.
Mm-hmm. And Kirsten Spaulding, does Ceres have a position on nuclear energy?
We have not, I think, taken a strong position. We look, you know, realistically at what's available in the market, and investors are making decisions about what they want to support in terms of new technologies. I'm hearing a lot more from our members about wind, solar, and in some cases hydro, but they're really looking at those as the new technologies that are going to dominate the clean energy economy.
All right. Well, thank you, Carl, for that question. So, Sandy, I wanted to ask you, you talked about 2020 being the year that we have to really start turning things around. So what do organizers have planned to sort of galvanize support between now and then? And are there particular pledges or, you know, positive action being taken by cities right here in the Bay Area that you could point to?
Yes. Well, cities in the Bay Area and cities around the world are joining a platform of pledges aimed at 2020. There's Mission 2020, there's Vision 2020. It's really being an iconic year. So cities are both pledging to go 100% renewable with very aggressive targets and also pledging to divest their funds from fossil fuels. The coordination between cities the size of New York and London recently has set off a movement that will certainly be very popular.
All right, and just some final thoughts. David Elliston, where do you see this sector going? What do you sort of see in your crystal ball in the next, you know, few years as to this movement towards sustainable investing?
It's an amazing moment for the finance community, which has a great deal of difficulty grappling with anything ethical. Or I shouldn't say it that way, but with something besides the number. And this is something where I think there's going to be a really interesting renaissance as people try to figure out how they can flex their muscles and express their values through their investments, but still get the results they're looking for.
And Kirsten, same question for you. Kind of final thoughts from a series perspective or your own personal perspective, where you think things are going to be going in this direction of sustainable investing?
When I work with institutional investors, I would say that there's a lot more interest. There are deeper and broader commitments. We're seeing dollars move into the low carbon clean energy space, but at the same time, we're seeing real energy and activity around working with the policymakers, so investors using their voice in the political arena, calling on policies that would set the right direction, disclosure, and the engagement. So I think the investor agenda, this framework that says we got to work on this problem from multiple directions, I think we're going to see a lot more activity going in that direction.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you all very much for joining. That's City Visions for this evening. My guests were earlier joined by California State Controller Betty Yee. So I definitely want to thank Controller Yee for joining us. And here in studio, we had Reverend Kirsten Spaulding, Senior Director of the Investor Network at Ceres. Kirsten, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to be with you.
And Sandy Emerson, head of the Move Your Money campaign and a fossil-free California board member. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And finally, thank you very much, clean finance expert David Elliston, creator of Clean Portfolios.
Great to be here.
Thank you all, of course, for joining us this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, and to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David La Tulipe, and tonight's show was produced by Jennifer Ruick. Tune in next week when we will be discussing Prop C, a measure to tax San Francisco businesses to pay for housing and mental health services here in the city. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.